Welcome everybody to the ProWrestling.net Progress Wrestling Review. My name is Hayden Glid, and I am joined, I'm so happy to say, by my co-host Darren Gutteridge.
Hello everybody.
I'm sorry, should I be Mr. Darren Gutteridge?
Yeah, of course, but other than that, hello everybody.
We're going to be reviewing Progress Chapter 38 after the break for non-members. And we are back. Darren, I had a bit of time on my hands today, and do you know what I did?
Go on.
I counted up how long me and you have talked on Progress Audios over the, I think this is our seventh, so the six that we've done, I counted up how long we've talked about
Progress. Oh, Christ, okay.
Do you want a quick guess of how long do you think we've talked?
10 hours.
Oh, okay. It's only 8 hours, so you kind of blew that out of the water. But 8 hours and 8 minutes.
Okay.
And then I thought, well, we've done 50 ROH Ring of Honor audios. So I'm guessing we've probably talked wrestling for at least a day of our lives.
Oh, at least two at this point, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's quite disturbing, isn't it?
That is a ridiculous amount of audio we provided for people, but no one's complained about us yet, really. At least they haven't complained to me. They usually end up complaining to you for some reason.
Well, no, that's more the written stuff, because I complained about a finish which somebody said that didn't actually happen. Oh, so that's a long inside story.
Yeah, you tend to attract the crazies for whatever reason. They're either intimidated of me or just don't care enough to write, or just my writing is so magnanimous and flawless that they cannot pick fault with it. I'm okay with either of those things.
I attract the crazies, and I'm talking to you right now. But you are listening to this audio on the All Access side. We don't usually give away the Progress Wrestling audio review on the All Access side, and we usually give it to our members only. But it's not only the Progress Wrestling review that is behind the paywall. .NET members get audio reviews each and every week of Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, TNA Impact, ROH TV, NXT, along with audio recaps of every network special a mere hour or two after the pay-per-view is finished. We obviously also do the Progress Wrestling review, as I just said, and it's always me and Darren doing this. And you also get discussion shows such as the British Invasion, which again, myself and Darren do, or the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast with Will and Jake. There is also the opportunity to join in the Q&A audio that Jason Powell does each and every week for members, as well as, of course, the flagship show, .NET Weekly, where Jason and a co-host break down the news of the week or, in the holiday season, a full rundown of the roster. That's a small plug for my appearance next week to do the Orange roster. Thank you, Darren.
Hayden has finally made it onto .NET Weekly, everybody, and I won't be able to take the mic anymore.
What are you going to say from now on? What's going to be a long-standing joke?
I'll say where Jason and a guest of the week, Hayden as well, but yeah, including Hayden. See, I'm nice. I was just pointing it out in order to, you know, get the cogs moving for you to appear on there. I'm very happy for you.
So how much is all the audio that I just mentioned before Darren ruined my plug? And as well as that, you also get ad-free access to the website, etc. It's actually $7.50 a month. And as I'm finishing off this plug now, Darren is going to nicely have a look to see how much that is in British pounds and pence.
£6.70.
Oh, wow. Okay, you're mega prepared. I wasn't expecting that.
So, yes, I always throw it at you, so I knew you'd throw it at me, and this is why I don't get complaints.
Fair point. So why not treat yourself over the Christmas period to a month of .NET membership, or if you were a member already, treat a friend or a loved one to the .NET goodness. So, Darren, right off the bat, I am going to throw it to you, and I'm going to ask you, what were your overall thoughts of Chapter 38, which I should mention was labelled When Men Throw Men at Men?
First off, the best chapter name so far.
Yes.
Possibly the greatest pay-per-view name of all time.
Is it not Roadblock End of the Line?
No, it's not Roadblock. The blockening of the end is ending is nigh. No, it was not. This was an okay show. I'd say it's a pretty above average across the board. One or two duds that really did drag down the middle part of it. But full disclosure, I have watched the next show, which is the Graps of Wrath, and Intercepted Angel, which is chapter 40 as well. And I'd say this one is in the middle ground between those three shows. It's a nice kind of medium between those two in terms of the best of progress and the worst of progress.
Yeah, that was sort of my thoughts. It was a very entertaining show, but for a progress show, it did come across as just average, or just, as you said, just above average. I'm sure we'll get into why we think that as we go along. Usually at this point of a normal progress recap, I give a not suitable for work mention, because Progress Wrestling is a company aimed for adults with adult content in it. As a consequence, when we are recapping the show, we do say the swear words, etc., and also let the language flow naturally as we talk about the event. However, however, on the All Access side of things, we can't do that. So, Darren, I've come up with the code. If they use the F word, then I'm going to say fudge.
Okay.
If they say the S word, I'm going to say poo.
Let's just go with sugar.
Sugar, yeah, okay. And if it's the D word, I will say dongle, because I thought that was very appropriate.
Oh, okay. I can deal with dongle. That's fine. yeah, this is going to be slightly difficult, because this tends to be the show where we can let loose. But we will endeavour. We will power on through. Progress endeavour. That's a thing. Making puns I don't even realise it. But yes, I will point out that in my notes, the first two sentences have swear words in. So this is going to be a long evening.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Okay, so the first thing that we see, as we always do before progress, is the commercial where we are told not to be a dongle, which is basically an anti-piracy video. We're then at the Electric Ballroom in Camden. The first thing that struck me, Darren, and I don't know if it was... just something that I just noticed, but everything looked a bit sharper. The lighting looked a bit better, and the cameras seemed mm-hmm. to be of a higher definition.
I can see where you're coming from, but I think they've just got their Camden shows down so on point that we don't really appreciate how good it is until we've come out of like a Manchester show or another show of that ilk. So this was, I believe, the second show coming out of Brixton and the first one back at Camden, and the previous show being in Manchester, where they always have a little bit of a dip in quality production. So I don't know whether it's just that, but yeah, having seen another Camden show this morning, I can confirm, yeah, they're looking pretty good in their hometown venue.
Yeah, definitely. In the arena, the bell tolled in the Electric Ballroom and Jim Smallman's music hit and he climbed in the ring. He patted the Progress Wrestling symbol in the middle of the ring as the crowd chanted Jim, Jim, Jim. He welcomed the crowd and talked some local issues that were happening at the time, including the British rail system, which led to a fudge Southern Rail chant. He mentioned it was the first show at Camden since Brixton, which Darren just mentioned, and Jim then had some fun with people who had dressed up in fancy dress, as this was around Halloween. I should have noted at the start that this was originally held on the 30th of October. We are catching up, folks, we are catching up. So yeah, he was making fun of people dressed up in the crowd, including someone who's dressed up as Zach Gibson, which I can't even describe how funny it was, and I just won't do it justice, so you just need to watch the show. Darren, this to me is what makes Progress so much fun. I know we talked about on our previous audio for members that it sometimes feels that it's a bit too... we want the crowd to love us, love us, love us, love us. But I just feel that in Camden especially, it just gets a feeling with Jim working the crowd that it's a community more than a please love us, please love us.
Yeah, I do occasionally get a bit annoyed by the kind of let's all hold hands and sing Kumbaya approach that can creep into Progress. Please see a previous Progress audio where I kind of go to town on that very concept. via the medium of Blackstone Cherry. Yeah, please do listen to that audio. But no, I like that, yeah, they are inclusive and they make people feel, you know, part of the show, but it's yet to cross that line where the fans have kind of taken over. You know, they've kind of hijacked the show or gone into business for themselves. That hasn't happened yet. But with this type of mentality, I do feel like that will one day happen, where the fans start to believe themselves as like celebrities. Yes. And I am always fearful of that. There still needs to be a little bit of distance put between the two between those two concepts of the wrestling company and their fans. There should still be a little bit of distance, and Progress really cuts that fine, but thankfully it's not happening. Other than the prune, who sat on the front row at We're Gonna Need a Bigger Room Again, who we have gone on record as calling him a prune, and he's a prune. Other than that, it's okay so far, but I don't know, a few times tonight, I was like, okay, Camden, let's all calm down a little bit.
The guy at Brixton, I believe, I called a dongle on our members' audio.
You did. I prune was genuinely my word for him. Like, that's not euphemism or me trying to, you know, what's the word? Censor anything. No, he's just a prune.
After having some banter with the crowd, Jim then introduced the commentators, Callum Leslie and part owner Glenn Joseph. He led the crowd in a chorus of Buddy Holly by Weezer because he says Glenn looks like him. He ran down the only rule in Progress, which is don't be a dongle. So, the first match was the Hunter Brothers against the New Nation. The New Nation were out first to their song Crushed by Parkway Drive. They didn't get a strong reaction either way, but they climbed in the ring and climbed the turnbuckles. I did note that this song was not good. I did not like it at all.
No.
But the Hunter Brothers then came out to a fantastic song, which was 20th Century Boy by T-Rex. now, Darren, I believe you are familiar with the Hunter Brothers. Is that correct?
Yes. The ever-increasing number of Fight Club Pro regulars in Progress is going through the roof. The Hunter Brothers have finally arrived. They are the staple tag team of Fight Club Pro, my local indie promotion. They are from Tipton. Let me explain Tipton to you. Tipton is actually the next town over from where I live, which is Wensbury. Now, I've seen them on other shows where they've been billed from Birmingham. And that's a bad thing because a lot of people from Birmingham, it's a very big city, it's very generic. Whereas when they're announced from Tipton, as they are in Flight Club Pro, it gets the Tipton chant, which is one of my favourite things on earth. And I never thought I would see it anywhere other than Wolverhampton. To see it in London is kind of amazing. But yes.
The Tipton chant.
Yes. Tipton.
Oh, my Lord.
Turn. Yes, it's meant to be said in my accent. That's when it sounds the best. Because, you know, Tipton is a very small town. How it got this far, I don't know, but people just like saying, Tipton. I'm actually originally from Tipton, but it's kind of not a good thing to be that, so I keep that under my hat. I was 3 when I left that town. I hold no bonds with it whatsoever. It's okay, I'm actually from Wensbury. It's cool. But yes, you have no idea how much I was like, oh, don't say they're from Birmingham because this won't go over well with me. But no, they were from Tipton and London joined in with a Tipton tan. You know what, London? You're all right.
You're all right. Yeah, growing up, Darren, I would never have imagined that the West Midlands would be such a hotbed of wrestling.
Hey, you wait till we get to the next show. Oh, my God. Midlands Mafia taking over.
Wait until we get to the Birmingham show.
Oh, God, you wait till we get to the Birmingham show.
The New Nation were introduced as being from the Land of the Gods. I don't think that means Wales, but figuratively speaking, Land of the Gods. I had to get my own country in, didn't I, Darren?
I suppose. He's not on the new belt from the WWE, so you had to get it in somewhere.
Shut up, Tipton boy. They were introduced as Primate and the Class Apart Alexander Henry. And they were also introduced as making their Progress debut. They got booed, which I thought was quite amusing. The match started off with the Hunter Brothers on the offense, keeping Alexander Henry in their corner, and had some relatively impressive high spots, which pleased the crowd. Eventually, the power of Henry overcame the high spots of Hunter, and the Primate was tagged in, who looked basically like what Ro from War Machine would look like if he went on a massive crash diet. But I have noted that he's got a hell of an impressive beard. At one point, Lee Hunter got the hot tag and hit a lovely springboard moonsault. He followed this up with a beautiful enziguri on the Primate and a suicide dive on Henry. Primate caught Lee bouncing off the rope and hit 3 German suplexes, which led to some good fluid tag team moves from both teams. Towards the end of the match, Primate hit a double suplex on both Jim and Lee Hunter, which was incredibly impressive, and the crowd reacted approvingly of this. The big Alex Henry went to the top rope and hit a moonsault, sort of, and landed on all three men on the outside in another highly impressive spot. The New Nation missed the crossbody doomsday device and Lee Hunter hit a super kick. Primate charged into the corner, but Lee Hunter then moved, who then rolled up the big beardy man Primate for the 1-2-3, and the Hunter brothers' first chapter win in progress. The commentators talked about the Hunter brothers possibly taking on a team they know very well, that being the British Strong Style. As I said before, Darren, going into this match, I knew not much about these two teams, but except for through reputation and through you talking about the Hunter brothers. And for the first 5 minutes, I was kind of meh. It just seemed to me one bland power move team and one glorified jobber team. But I'll admit, by the end of the match, I was thoroughly entertained and impressed by both teams, and I thought it was a good opening match and a great way to start this evening. How about yourself?
Well, before we start, fudging Primate? With his sugary ape mask? It's just the worst thing. Like, this is Joe Coffey levels of just, like, stupid. It's just, but at least Joe Coffey has the good graces once he gets in the ring to throw away his cheap-looking mask. Now, Primate does that as well, but he's still called The Primate. He does have a real name, and they call him by it in this match.
Oh, they did, didn't they? The commentators mentioned it. I forgot to mention that.
But he's still referred to as The Primate, which is just... The Primate is never going to headline WrestleMania, is he? having said that, a man called The Rock has, so I suppose anything's possible. But yeah, that wasn't great. No, Alexander Hendry, he's a specimen.
Yeah.
He's just like what you would think of a Vince McMahon wet dream. Yeah. He's just tall, big, athletic-looking. He's just, yeah.
Do you know who he reminded me of? Donovan Dijak.
I was just about to say, yeah, I think he's got a bit more muscle mass than Dijak has. Dijak is kind of a tall drink of water, but yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, he's got a lot of potential there. Now, Primate does also have a good look. He has a stupid name. He does look like Rayro Mark II. He also wrestles like him, thanks to some dangerous frozen suplexes yes. that nearly landed some Hunter brothers on their heads. I thought it was a great match. I think it was exciting. I think it was fast paced. The athleticism was really good. I think both teams have great futures in progress. I think the tag division in progress is kind of stale at the second. Because, I mean, you've got British Strong Style, so you've got new champions, but they're locked in, you know, a feud with the London Rides at the moment, who've also been there for just donkey's years. FSU just turn up occasionally and have a quick match, but they don't really gain any momentum or stuff. The South Pacific Power Trip are great, but they're heels, so they're not going to be, you know, if British Strong Style are keeping those titles for a while, it's not going to be those two taking those titles off them. I think that therefore leaves a bit of a hole. Now, hopefully that hole will get filled by the banter edition of The Origin, which would be the greatest thing ever. But no, I think both these teams can add a lot to this division. And the Hunter brothers, as again, I've seen them for years. They're solid. I've yet to see them have a really bad match, but having said that, I've yet to see them have a really... Like I said, this match was good, but this is in their upper echelons. I haven't really seen them go a level beyond this. I don't know. They're not... They haven't got a great look. I know they're like similar looking brothers. They're not twins, but they are very similar looking brothers. Yeah. I just don't think they have a really good build. They're quite small and thin, which is not a bad thing. If you can wrestle a great match, you can wrestle a great match. But that has held them back a little bit, and I'd like to see them step up maybe in the future.
Well, I'm actually really glad I got to see the Hunter brothers because you've told me about them before. I'm sure on one of our car journeys to a show sometime, you've told me about them, and I've kept my eye out for them, so I was quite glad to see them. The commentators did mention that this could be a setup now for the Hunter brothers against the British Strong Style. Darren, in Fight Club Pro, how many times have you seen the Hunter brothers taking on Trent Seven and or Pete Dunne?
I have actually seen Mustache Mountain versus the Hunter brothers. That was on the last Fight Club Pro show I actually watched, which was last year, admittedly, but still. I could actually get excited for that match because I've seen it before. I know it's good. And they didn't exactly, because the Hunter brothers basically just face whichever imported tag team are there.
Right.
So, you know, they faced the Bravado brothers, and they faced the TNA guys, the kind of weird looking guy with the beard, and he's like more Andrew Everett and the other guy.
Trevor Lee,
yes, they face them. They tend to face whoever the import is, so they don't really face the Fight Club Pro regular. So it is a match I've seen, but it's not, you know, it's not overstating its welcome. Maybe we'll get to see it on a UK show, but that is, of course, dependent on the tag team champions actually being there.
Which I'm sure we'll talk about later on. After the Hunter Brothers finished celebrating, Jim Smallman was back in the ring, and he talked about the next match being part of the new Natural Progression tournament, which is this year women only, and this will crown the first Progress women champion. The tournament match on this particular show was Ginny versus Pollyanna. Ginny, for those who don't know, is probably the most hated women's wrestler in Progress, if not the UK. And although me and Darren have mocked her, and we don't particularly like her, I have to admit she does do a damn fine job in keeping the heat that she gets, mostly through her blank stares, whether that's by design or by accident. But anyway, she came out first to her music, which is Turn My Swag On by Soulja Boy. Pollyanna was out next to, is it the Game of Thrones music, Darren?
Yes, it's the Game of Thrones techno remix.
Okay. She came up to a great reaction, and she climbed in the ring and went nose-to-nose with Ginny. The music stopped, and the crowd chanted, Polly, Polly, fudgin' Anna, and Polly's going to kill you. This censoring of the language, Darren, it just doesn't work.
It's going to be hard to maintain. We're only one match in, Hayden. Stay strong.
Yes. Ginny cheap-shotted Pollyanna, but then took time out to scream at the crowd. Pollyanna came blasting out the corner with a spear, and both ladies took turns in catfighting on the mat before Pollyanna threw Ginny halfway across the ring by her hair. The commentators talked about this same matchup was the first ever women's match in Progress last year. The match was clunky and it didn't really flow all that well. Ginny was on offense for the majority of the match and was basically looking for the Styles Clash. But Pollyanna eventually fought back and hit an enziguri to gain the offense. Towards the end of the match, Ginny was mocking Pollyanna. Pollyanna got on her knees and spat at Ginny and hit a powerbomb on the most hated woman in Progress. She tried to follow up with a suicide dive, but Ginny hit a forearm to cut her off. Both ladies battled on the apron and hit dueling forearms. She went for a finisher, but she held onto the ropes. Ginny attempted a pile driver, but Polly held onto the ropes also. Polly then hit a spiked DDT on the apron, and both ladies were sparked out on the ringside area. Pollyanna eventually got to her feet and threw Ginny in the ring. She climbed to the top rope, but Ginny recovered and went for a superplex, also from the top rope, obviously. Polly came back with headbutts, which knocked Ginny off the top, and she was dangling in the corner by her feet. Pollyanna followed up with knees in the corner for a close two count. The end of the match came when Pollyanna hit a front facebuster but didn't go for the cover. Ginny got to her knees and gave the middle finger. Polly threw her from her shoulders but only got a two count again. Ginny showed remarkable powers of recovery and got Pollyanna onto the top rope and hit an X-Factor from the top rope for a close two count. She hit a Styles Clash, which Pollyanna had to help her get applied for another two count. I'll speak about that in a moment. Pollyanna came back and hit... Darren, what is Pollyanna's finishing move?
Oh, the Pollinator.
Thank you. She hit the Pollinator twice, but she went for it the third time, and Ginny rolled up Pollyanna for the three count. After the match, Pollyanna looked distraught in the ring while Ginny celebrated on the stage. Right, Darren, based on the amount of high-impact moves that were hit and the near falls down the stretch, to me it kind of felt that they were trying to make this match seem like an epic contest. Did they deliver?
No.
No, not at all.
This was not good.
No.
All the memorable spots were either because they were dangerous or because they were sloppy.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Do you know what the irony is? The safest looking move was the Styles Clash.
Yeah, which is saying something.
Yeah.
But it feels like if they're being referred to as, you know, the women of progress and the uncrowned champions, they should be a lot better than what they are. They should be a lot further down the line than they are. And this just didn't really portray them in the greatest light, either of them. I thought Pollyanna was... So I know we've seen Ginny more than we have seen Pollyanna, but I thought Pollyanna was further along this, considering how over she is with the crowd. But and given how many times they've wrestled each other, they, you know, people who are not great wrestlers, if they wrestle each other enough times, they can get some decent chemistry going. And it's, and that just didn't happen for whatever reason. And we can now add the Pollinator to the list of Progress Wrestling finishers which are garbage, which is also the show stolen from Nathan Cruz, because if you hit your finishing move twice and then still get rolled up moments later before you hit a third one, your finisher is garbage, throw it away, start again.
Yeah.
And yes, it's just, it was a ridiculous ending, didn't like it very much, and I can confirm, again, having seen ahead a few matches and some of the women we know are coming in, all of those women, to a woman, are better than both Pollyanna and Ginny. So hopefully the quality of the tournament, in fact, I know the quality of the tournament is on the way up from here. So this is a rough start, but I'm actually still excited for this series going forward, thankfully.
Yeah, most of this match I was actually watching through my fingers simply because it was just cringing how close they came to some serious injuries. You know, literally they were tucking their necks in at the last second. Otherwise, you know, there was going to be a serious injury. It was just cringe. And as I said, when it comes to Ginny hitting essentially what is considered to be one of her finishing holds, which is the Styles Clash, the fact that she has to get her opponent to, as she's dangling upside down, to wrap her arms around your leg in order to hit the move, it just looks bad. And
Yeah, they could have told a better story with simpler moves. They could have toned it down and told a better story without having to go to all these kind of high wire type of scenarios. And that's what really snookered this match, I think.
And what irritated me more than anything, and what irked me and took the believability out of this match for me, was the fact that they were going for these epic moves and Ginny was just popping back up as if nothing had happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to attempt these moves and to really sort of walk that tightrope, but then you have to sell the outcomes of them. You can't just have Ginny just pop right back up and roll Pollyanna up after she's hit a move twice on you. You know, you just shouldn't be able to do that.
You're right, but I would say that hopefully this means that the worst match of the night is out of the way, but I was wrong.
I'm curious now. I can't remember what other matches are on this card, so we'll get to it at the same time, I think. Jim was back in the ring and introduced the next match, which was the Pastor William Eva against Paul Robinson. Paul Robinson came out, and again, I will note that he looks like the love child of Justin Credible and Christopher Daniels. And he came out to a song by Dan Lesac. The crowd absolutely hated on the former kickboxer. He got in the face of a guy at ringside who looked terrified, but still managed to flip him the double bird. And to be fair, Paul Robinson looks like such a hard so-and-so, I wouldn't want to cross him. Darren, if he's at Birmingham, please don't flip him the bird and let him come anywhere near me.
Hayden, you know my feelings towards flipping the bird on a Progress show. That will not happen.
Okay, don't give him the V signs then.
Deal.
Pastor William Eva came out to Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode, and the crowd absolutely loved him. For all our All Access listeners, Darren, who don't usually get to listen to us talking about Progress, how would you describe Pastor William Eva?
It's really simple. He's a wrestling vicar. He's a priest who wrestles, but unlike in Mexico, where they have to put a mask on and pretend not to be a priest, he just brings the robes to wrestling. And it's great. All of his gimmick is a pun on something. So his name is William Eva. Another, you know, nickname for William is Bill. That makes his name Bill Eva, Believer. His finishing move is the clothesline from heaven. It's just everything about it is just wonderful.
The pastor got in the ring and Paul Robinson tried to get in his face. Paul Robinson was then introduced as being from Southend and got a negative reaction. Pastor William Eva was introduced and the crowd cheered and chanted "We Believe." In a moment, which I'm sure the Christians listening to this show will like, the crowd chanted "Fudge him up, Jesus, fudge him up." The bell rang, and William charged up Robinson, but Paul got his foot up and started to lay left and rights into the pastor. Never thought I would say that sentence, laying left and rights into the pastor. Anyway, Eva came back with a suicide dive. The match became somewhat of a back and forth, with neither men really getting the offense for long periods of time. A match eventually settled into Robson on offense with his painful-looking moveset, including kicks and knees to the back and chest and biting of the fingers. The finish came when Pastor charged at Robson in the corner. Paul moved, and with Pastor William Eva selling in the middle of the ring, Paul Robinson hit a curb stomp for the three counts. Before we get into what happened next, I thought, Dan, that this was the best wrestle match I've seen from Pastor William Eva in. Not saying he's had bad matches in the past, but he's never quite looked up to a decent standard before. But I think Paul Robinson got a good standard out of him.
Yeah, I'd agree. He's flattered to deceive so far, William Eva. I think he's just coasting along on the strength of his gimmick and him, which everyone liked him. He had that great moment on the first Progress show we reviewed it, even where he cashed in his their equivalent of Money in the Bank and won the Progress title, however fleeting it was. He's now in this storyline, which we'll talk about in a moment, that hasn't really, you know, produced a lot of great matches, unfortunately, but this was definitely the best one we've seen so far, I agree. It served both men well, in that it's okay that William Eva's losing at the moment, for a reason we'll get into in a moment. And I like that they're building up Paul Robinson as like this vicious little pit bull.
Yeah.
Like, he has been built up as this in the past when he was in Jimmy Havoc's kind of heel stable. But I really do think there's money in Paul Robinson as a heel champion down the line. I think you get the right babyface opponent and then have this guy, you know, this little short guy who everyone's going to, you know, he's got little man syndrome and he's just a vicious man about it. I'd be okay with him being, as I said, a heel champion down the line, because he could really get some good, interesting matches coming, because he can wrestle. It's not like he's just a kind of deathmatch guy who has to rely on a lot of gore and a lot of shenanigans to get by. He can wrestle, just he chooses to be a vicious little sugar.
Am I right in saying that there's a ready-made program with Jimmy Havoc, with Paul Robinson?
Yes, Paul Robinson was the reason that Jimmy Havoc had to leave Progress Wrestling, or at least kayfabe leave Progress Wrestling for a while, which was actually the only Progress show I ever attended they had that match on. It was a horrible DQ match. And I don't mean that in terms of quality, it's just it was genuinely horrible. They were both covered in blood and it was barbaric. That's just not my scene. But yeah, there is definitely a built-in storyline there should they want to go with a kind of turn, you know, a slight turn with a babyface Jimmy Havoc versus a true heel Paul Robinson. That could be quite interesting.
And after the match, William Eva was sat in the middle of the ring when Sebastian's music hit, which is Forever, which features Kanye West, Lil Wayne, and Eminem. And out he came with a neck brace and all. He climbed in the ring, took off his jacket, and then took off his neck brace and laughed at the crowd. He handed the neck brace to William Eva. He turned to the three owners, John, Glenn, and Jim, and asked why the fudge is he booked while pointing at the pastor. He said, at Brixton, he could have fudging killed me. He said that the title of the show is fitting, as they are all pawns. Nobody cares if at Brixton he had woken up that night. He told the crowd to fudge off. He said he could have pressed charges against William, and you know what, he might still do that. He said that Eva is one phone call away from the dream of wrestling around the world being ended. So from now on, you belong to me, Eva. You will do my bidding. At Brixton, you held my life in your hands. Now I hold yours in mine. He told John to play his fudging music, and he left the ring. A couple of things first. I thought Sebastian was fantastic with his promo. A lot more assured than I've seen before. I can't remember what chapter it was, but I was somewhat critical of his delivery. But I thought he really sort of got his teeth into this promo, and I really liked it. I'm not always keen on wrestlers threatening to press charges and bringing legal situations into the wrestling world. But I'm going to let this play out before I get too critical of that aspect of the storyline. The other thing I want to mention, and then I'll throw it over to you, Darren, is I didn't realize that they did actually have a match at Brixton, because it wasn't on the on-demand video that they put up of the show. And Sebastian legitimately did get injured during that match, and the match was called off for that reason. I hate to be too critical at this juncture about this, but it would have been nice to have seen, not necessarily any sort of horrible footage of an injury, but just in terms of letting the people who were not at Brixton know what they were talking about.
Yeah, that's the major flaw with this programme so far, is that the real meat of it, the real substance here, is that, you know, we didn't get to see the angle. Me and you, remember, we talked about that show, we reviewed that show, and we genuinely wondered where it was, because we had avoided spoilers, obviously, because we didn't want to see on Twitter what had happened at the show. We wanted to be, you know, kept spoiler-free. And, yeah, it just seemed suspicious by its absence, to the point I thought it may have happened on, like, a pre-show or something like that, but no. They cut it, and I understand why they cut it, because it was, you know, a genuinely terrible accident, and it happened in, like, the first move of the match, so it's not like they cut, you know, a huge match from the show or anything, but it was very odd that they're now hoping for us to really invest in this storyline, even though it's changed tack. Because originally, remember, Sebastian was taunting Bill Eva with, like, a secret that he knew.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and that's now gone. There's been barely any mention of that since Brixton. And it is now, you injured me, I hold your life in my hands, you belong to me now. Which is fine as far as, you know, wrestling storyline goes. The whole legal side of things never, ever ends well.
No.
That's always a bad, bad omen when that starts getting brought into it. But
see Cedric Alexander and Vader Scott.
Exactly my point. So, yeah, that's, I'm liking everything they're doing. I did like Sebastian's promo. I do like that they're, you know, really going to give some time to this storyline and have William Eva lose. But, yeah, a highlight package, something that shows the kind of the meat in this sandwich will really, really help get this storyline over, I think.
Yeah, even if they had just shown, like, some footage of him being stretched out. I know they couldn't have put that on the actual show, the on-demand version of it. But in terms of for this angle, it's obvious that he's either recovered or recovering. So
yeah.
It's not. It wouldn't be such a sort of. I'm trying to think of the words. Exploitive, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I see exactly what I mean. It's like the way to equate it. It's like A New Hope if they just cut out the Death Star blowing up Alderaan. Like, no, you don't need to see that bit, it's not that important. But it really kind of is. Like, you kind of need that to know why we don't like the Empire. So we kind of need to see Sebastian get waffled in the face by a clothesline so we understand why, you know, Sebastian's so annoyed and why he has William Eva in such a, you know, tied up in such a knot.
First Star Wars reference of the night, folks.
I'm very proud of myself.
Have you got anything else to say about Sebastian?
Nope.
No, nothing at all. Cool. Jim climbed back in the ring and said the next match is a Tornado Tables match, and it's between the South Pacific Power Trip and Jack Sexsmith and Roy Johnson. Jim announced that the rules are that both members of the team have to go through tables. They played a backstage promo with Jack Sexsmith and Roy Johnson talking about how the Pacific Power Trip had screwed them several times, but now they have a stipulation on this match. Sexsmith said that he's been victimized for who he is, and Johnson said that they can't think of a better way of making an impact than beating the number one contenders for the tag team titles. Roy Johnson, Jeff Jarrett glasses and all, came out to his music, and his specs flashed green, and the crowd responded positively. Jack Sexsmith made his entrance, which was "When I Think of You, I Touch Myself" by The Vinyls. Say what you want about Jack Sexsmith's antics in the ring, and I'm sure we will at some point, but he really gets the crowd going. Hearing 700 grown people singing, "Ooh, when I think of you, I touch myself," is so surreal, Darren.
It's disturbing, it's what it is, Aiden, but there we go.
This is our 7th Progress Audio, as I mentioned earlier on, and Darren, I'm going to do a test with you to see how well you know me. If I mentioned to you the South Pacific Power Trip music, what would my opinion be of it?
I would say you think it's the worst music in wrestling and possibly one of the worst songs ever. That is because you don't keep it 100.
And you would be right. Anyways, that awful, truly awful traffic jam music played, and the two baby faces in the ring looked intensely at the stage. Dahlia Black, who is TJ Cooper's girlfriend, came out on the stage, and TJ Cooper and Travis Banks attacked from behind. The crowd chanted, "You've got poo dungarees." This was an interesting match with a lot going on, as you can imagine, with it being a Tornado's tables match. Both Johnson and Sexsmith early on went to the top and dived on their opponents on the outside. Sexsmith stalked TJ Cooper at ringside with a chair. Travis Banks tried to hit a sneaky suicide dive, but Sexsmith used the chair and caught Banks right in the head with the steel chair. Basically think Chris Jericho smashing Chris Benoit with a chair at Royal Rumble 2001, I think it was. It was basically like that. In a somewhat amusing moment at one point, Sexsmith, channeling Bubba Ray, told Johnson to get the tables. But Johnson, refusing to be the token black guy, told Sexsmith to get them himself, which he did, and slid them in the ring. One thing I did notice is that they were obviously brand new tables, as they still had the price sticker on them. Sexsmith tried to set up a table on each side of the ring, but Dahlia Black interfered. This allowed the heels to gain the advantage on both the babyfaces with attacks from behind. The action spilled to the entrance stage with Sexsmith power slammed TJ Cooper. Black tried to interfere, but Jack Sexsmith gave her a kiss on the lips. And with this distraction, TJ Cooper snuck up from behind again and threw Sexsmith off the stage into the crowd. And they played up the fact that Sexsmith was seriously injured, and they did this with the commentators talking with the hushed tones and the referees and trainers charging to where Sexsmith had landed. However, this meant that the body guy, Roy Johnson, was now facing the Pacific Power Trip 2-1. He eventually made a comeback, but the numbers game overcame him. He did make a comeback briefly, but again, Dahlia Black caused a distraction. TJ Cooper snuck up from behind and aimed a punch at the body guy, but instead missed and hit his girlfriend in the mouth, who then fell off the apron onto a table. She does seem to be taking a lot of shots in the mouth, poor Dahlia Black. However, Travis Banks caught Roy Johnson and threw him through a table set up in the corner. With that, Jack Sexsmith came back and took on both men. Eventually, though, again, the numbers game caught up with Sexsmith, and they tried to double superplex him through a table mid-ring. But Roy Johnson came back in and picked up both men on his shoulders and dropped them where the table had been before, which didn't make much sense. Jack and Roy Johnson then hit a 3D on Travis Banks through the table to make it 1-1. TJ Cooper came in the ring and knocked out Johnson with a chair. Sexsmith and Cooper faced each other and unloaded left and rights on each other. Cooper, however, hit a low blow, but Sexsmith came back with a spiked DDT. He brought another table into the ring and then brought out Mr. Cocko, which this time he brought out of his backside. Basically, for any new listeners, Mr. Cocko is a condom which he keeps on his person as he's wrestling. Yeah. He put the condom in his hand and waited for TJ Cooper to get to his feet and stuck it in the mouth of the New Zealander. Cooper was tapping, but of course that means nothing in this type of match. TJ eventually managed to get out of the ring, and Sexsmith stood up, but there was Travis Banks to meet him, who got him up into a powerbomb position and brought him down through the table. After the match, the crowd gave a standing ovation to Jack Sexsmith and Ray Johnson. Sexsmith looked like he'd been knocked loopy and had no idea where he was. When he spoke earlier on, Darren, about a worse match than the ladies' match, was this the one you were speaking of?
It was indeed.
Yeah.
And I think there were some okay moments, which is better than almost all previous versions of this match. But it was still felt so indie-rific.
Yeah.
It really didn't feel like the high-quality product that Progress Wrestling throws out. This felt like, you know, we're all down an old working men's club, and we're going to put together a no disqualification match with these four scrubs, and everyone who's there is going to love it. And I just did not like it. And there's just a lot, like, Roy Johnson even, he hasn't really ever stood out to me, other than he's got a few power moves, and that's great, but he doesn't impress me in any other way. So look forward to him in the WWE UK tournament. That should be fun. Hopefully you're listening to this All Access audio and noticing how many of the people we'd like and all the big stars of the UK scene aren't actually in the WWE UK tournament. In fact, I think Roy Johnson is the only one on this show who is.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, I think he's more there because of his mic skills as opposed to anything else. You know, more the comic relief of the tournament as opposed to anyone with any credible threat.
Plus, WWE can't seem to have a tournament without some dude with light-up glasses, because they also had that in the Cruiserweight Classic, with that guy who had the really tall hair, like Paul Phoenix,
which
also had its own pair of glasses. Roy Johnson's not that cool. And then you have Jack Sexsmith. Now, that pre-match promo actually shed some light. And I was like, you know what? There's actually a really, really good story you could tell here.
Yeah.
You could really play up, like, you know, he has been picked on his whole life for the, you know, the choices, his lifestyle and that type of thing. That can make him a really sympathetic babyface. That could be a really progressive thing for progress to do. However, the way either they choose to portray this, or he himself chooses to portray his, you know, lifestyle choices, his sexuality, or whatever you want to call it, is by being a sexual predator. There's no other word for it. He, you know, kisses another man's girlfriend just for the hell of it. He usually, on most of these shows, he ends up putting his arse in someone's face. And not like in a sexy way, he'll just stand over them and put his arse in their face. And, you know, he's doing all this stuff that's just, it makes him look like a he's sexually ambiguous and all that good stuff, but it just doesn't come off in a likable way. And the whole Mr. Cocko thing is just a whole other thing that just makes him just seem skeezy. Just, he's not someone I want to cheer for, because he's just so repulsive of a person. You know what I mean? And I think a few tweaks, you don't need to take that stuff away entirely. He can still be flamboyant. Wrestling's full of flamboyant people. Hundreds of them. Look at Dalton Castle.
Yeah.
Exactly. Madly in love I am with Dalton Castle, and how annoyed I am that Ring of Honor is currently denying me access to Dalton Castle. Winds me up. So there is a way, a great story you could tell with Jack Sexsmith. I don't think he's a great wrestler, but that hasn't held back. You know, there's a lot of people in the world who've got over as in wrestling companies who aren't great at wrestling. Let's just look at Kevin Nash for an example. So all they need to do, a few major tweaks, and I could be invested. However, as it is right now, whenever he shows up, I just immediately switch off, because he's not for me. It holds no appeal for me whatsoever. And now that I know it could hold appeal for me, I detest it even more.
What I will say is that you've pretty much hit on all the negative points I've got. So I'm going to counter with some positive points, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I enjoyed this match, because I didn't. But what I will say, basically what you said about Jack Sexsmith, I felt he was a little bit more toned down in this match, though, which kind of... I didn't feel as repulsed as I usually do watching a Jack Sexsmith match. I will say that, you know, this was somewhat of a fitting end to, although it hasn't been a great feud, it has been a feud that has built up to this point. So, storyline-wise, I felt it reached a natural, good conclusion.
Yes, as long as it is the conclusion. But having said that, it felt like they've concluded this before and it's just carried on. And I do think it is good that they're putting stock into the South Pacific Power Trip, because I do feel they can be a good team. They have a certain level of star quality to them. It's not overwhelming. They're by far and away not the most overacts in the company, but there is something there. They do feel like a real team. And they have got wrestling skills, particularly Travis Banks. I do feel he's had a standout singles year in other promotions. They haven't really used him as a single star here. He's in this tag team, but I do think they could be future tag team champions. And when they split up, I do think there's something to each of those acts that they could go on and be successful in Progress as singles guys as well.
And the last thing I want to say about this match is, Progress, please, no chair shots to the head, please.
Oh, yes. And also, just as alarmingly, please make Dahlia Black put on some real trousers. Those things look painful, how far they are up her arse.
Now you see, I make a valid point thinking about the health of the wrestlers, and you return with a comment like that.
I am also thinking of the health of a wrestler. Those can't be healthy for you.
That's true.
There's no way she's enjoying her night when she's in those goddamn things.
So that ended the first half of the show. So, the second half of the show started with Jim Smallman back in the ring. He announced that the first match of the second half is the Atlas Championship Open Challenge. The man who will be heard, Rampage Brown, made his entrance carrying the Atlas belt. The champion was introduced as he swung the belt over his head, Ultimate Warrior style. I think it's important before we go any further to touch on the Atlas tournament for anyone who hasn't heard any of our Progress wrestling audios before. Basically, the Atlas tournament is the reverse of the Cruiserweight Championship in terms of it was a tournament that they originally held over the course of, I think it was about 5 or 6 different chapters, and it was not a particularly great tournament that me and Darren both were critical of. And it was essentially for the men that were billed as over 205 pounds when clearly they were over the 300 pound mark. But Darren, we just don't like these matches, do we, at the moment? They just don't seem to grab us.
No, nothing about that tournament was good. And since we've come out of it, it hasn't really improved past that point, unfortunately. On the last show, we had the first of these open challenges, and it was Mikey Whipwreck, who is just... Mikey Whiplash. Yeah, it was Mikey Whipwreck. That'd be kind of funny. No, it's Mikey Whiplash. Sorry.
Rampage Brown against Mickey Whiplash.
That would be a hell of a thing. But yeah, Mikey Whiplash versus Rampage Brown is essentially the least interesting match it is actually possible for Progress Wrestling to put on. So the only way was up here. But yeah, I still think it's flawed with Rampage Brown as champion, because I don't know about you, Hayden, but he himself is the most boring wrestler in Progress, possibly on the UK scene altogether, other than like Yest and Reese and other big, large dudes that don't really do much. Rampage Brown, I still don't know how he's so popular, and I still don't get how he's so successful. He's just so dull. In fact, his last name of Brown, the color brown is too exciting for Rampage Brown. He should be Rampage Beige.
Oh dear me, I love your rants, Darren.
I'm going to call him Rampage Beige from here on out.
Do you know, whenever we do these audios, and I need a quick break to have a drink or something, and just want to have a bit of a giggle, I set you up on a rant. It's brilliant.
It is a very, you know what makes me bite, so yeah. You're very smart in doing that.
So yeah, as Darren touched on, this was a open challenge for the Atlas title match, and as I said, Rampage Brown was already in the ring. Rampage Beige. His opponent was introduced as Bad Bones, who came out to I Walk Alone by Raw Solution. Basically, he's a German wrestler who competes all around Europe, and you may know him from TNA. He had a couple of short spells here and there, and he was also a competitor on TNA's initial Gut Check show. The match started, and Bones gained the initial advantage and was dominating Rampage Beige. Well, that's really hard to say, Rampage Beige.
What about Rambage?
Rambage.
Rampage. Something. Just call him Rampage.
He hit a nice suicide dive where he dived between the bottom and middle rope. In a moment where I was actually hurting just watching the match, one man would run towards the corner and either Rampage Brown would follow up with a clothesline or Bad Bones would follow up with a chop. As I said, it hurt me just watching it, let alone how I must have hurt in the ring. The crowd chanted "Save the Ring," which in the New Day chant, which I found quite funny. The finish came when Rampage Brown hit a back suplex from the second rope and followed up with a power driver for the 1-2-3, and Rampage Brown is hurt. Following the match, both men showed each other respect. Before I set off Darren on another rant, and we're probably going to disagree on this, for an Atlas match, I thought this was a decent one, and I kind of enjoyed it, and it was a glimpse, I think, of what I think they're aiming to do with the Atlas matches in terms of really stiff and strong-looking offense that looks like it really hurts. I know Rampage Brown is not the most charismatic. You've already said everything that I'm just about to say. But at the same time, I did enjoy this a lot more than I have most of the other Atlas tournament and Atlas Open Challenge matches so far.
I will say I preferred it to last chapter's one, but I don't think it was physically possible for you to dislike it more than the previous chapter's one. And there were some nice spots and some decent pyramids, but you get that in every single Rampage Beige match. Yeah. Anyway, they're all the same match. In fact, if I watched them side by side, I could probably actually say, no, they are actually the same match. He does, he's like Randy Savage. He just wrestles the, like, you know, he practices this match. I'm joking, of course. I'm just saying he used to practice his matches a lot.
You watch him mouth out, Darren Guttridge.
But Randy Savage would at least practice a lot of different matches with a lot of different people. Whereas Rampage Brown is essentially the Red Hot Chili Peppers of wrestling. He has one match and he's just remixed it ever so slightly 1,000 times over. There's another terrible comparison for me, which probably only makes sense to me internally. But yes, Chili Peppers of wrestling.
When you say things like that, it just bemuses me why I get people complaining about what I say.
It's okay, it's fine. I do think. Come on, all Red Hot Chili Peppers songs sound exactly the same. They all go bim 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 down here. All of them. And that's the same with Rampage Brage. They all are the exact same match. It was better than the last chapters, however marginally. But I still don't care. And I don't think I will care until he is not the champion anymore. And they give it to someone more dynamic who can have better matches. And that's the thing. The weight limit is over 205 pounds. I would imagine that takes up 80% of the Progress Wrestling roster. So it's not like they have to keep having these matches between two big hosses. I suppose that's why they set this kind of tournament up. So it was for that. It wasn't just a normal secondary title. But I feel like for example, I still feel Joe Coffey should have won this championship. Yeah. It would have been a great thing to be crowned the first Atlas champion. Then I don't think they're going to put the title on anytime soon, the Progress Wrestling title. It could be a fun move because he showed after he got out of the Atlas tournament, he started having good matches again. Had he been champion, I think we would have seen more dynamism in the matches. We would have seen different things brought to each encounter that Rampage Beige isn't bringing at the moment. So, yeah, better, but it's not. It's a minimal like jump, a fraction of a point up from the previous chapter.
Briefly touching on the WWE tournament again, one of the competitors is actually Rampage Brown's longtime tag team partner, T-Bone, who he was in the team single with. So, you know, at least WWE took the right person from that team.
And it's not like T-Bone's much better, but no. He's... They did get the slightly better side of team single. Can you just tell that I'm just, every time he's on my screen, like, okay,
Jack Sexsmith. Here he goes again.
Jack Sexsmith I don't want to watch because he offends me and annoys me in that way. Whereas I'd much rather watch, though, a Jack Sexsmith match than a Rampage Beige match.
Really? Wow.
I find them so interminably dull. And if bad is defined as the absence of good, then Rampage Brown matches are just the worst thing. There is almost no redeeming quality to any of them. There is a match coming up on a chapter in the not-so-distant future that I really should like because he's facing my favourite British wrestler and I still didn't care. That might be me being a bit premature and giving away that match. I still didn't care. That is the level of just rampant boredom I have with this man as champion, and I'm counting the days until someone takes that title off him, because I can't imagine it can get much worse.
One final question about this, and this will be for the people who have heard us before on All Access. What would you prefer, watching a Rampage Beige match or a BJ Whitmer against Steve Corino match?
That's a good question. Rampage Brown matches tend to be over quicker.
Fair enough.
So I go with that. They're both torturous. But I like Steve Corino. That's the thing. But whoever Rampage Brown faces, he just drags them down to his level as opposed to boosting them up. I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
With that positivity, the crowd gave a warm applause to Bad Bones and chanted, "Please come back," as he walked to the backstage area. Jim Smallman was back in the ring. He introduced the next match as a number one contenders match for the Smash Wrestling title, which was going to be between Matt Cross, who came out to King of the Cleveland Streets by American Werewolf, and he was followed by my boy, Mark Andrews, who came out to a song by his awesome band, Junior, called A House That's Not Quite Home. Two awesome songs for two awesome wrestlers and not a skateboard in sight. Matt Cross, of course, you may know from Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, or I think he was on the series of Tough Enough that was hosted by Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He was, and he had to pretend not to know how to wrestle things and then got kicked out in the first week.
That's right. Mark Andrews was, of course, introduced as being from Cardiff in South Wales, and the crowd chanted, we love you, Andrews, we do.
Just a quick thing, sorry, yeah, before we go on. You enjoy Mark Andrews' theme music?
Yes, I love it.
Why?
It's my kind of music.
But he just says, because I've got what I need, and 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 I've got what I need.
It's not like that at all.
It is exactly like that. He just says the same line. It rhymes because it's the same line. He just says it over and over again in a very kind of monotone way.
It's the bridge between the verse and the chorus. So
I've got what I need, and I've got what I need, and I've got what I need. Dear listeners, if you've
got Spotify, please do a search on Spotify for it. This is not an advertisement for this particular song, but I just want you to tell me that I'm right and Darren's wrong.
But it's like, okay, but I'm just say you wouldn't be able to tell if the CD was skipping. Let's put it that way on this song. And when he comes out of SSU, he comes out to Let's Get a Pie Song by Andrew WK.
Yes.
And which is 10 billion times better as an entrance music. And I don't know. I know he's got his own band and it's great, you know. But Chris Jericho doesn't come out to Fozzy for good reason.
Darren, you know I'm driving us from your house to Birmingham for the Progress show.
I've got Spotify
connected up to my car. I can just play that song over and over again.
I presume he must have better songs, but still. Jericho doesn't come out to Fozzy, so there's no need for Mark Andrews to come out to Junior. Having said that, there's no earthly way that Junior is worse than Fozzy, so that's okay. And I've seen Fozzy live.
Any hoozles. Mark Andrews was introduced as being from Cardiff in South Wales, and the crowd chanted, we love you, Andrews, we do. They then chanted, we love you, Matt Cross, we do. The commentators put this across as a dream match, and the atmosphere was outstanding as a result. The match started off with hold and counter-hold, with both men getting their turn on offense, and of course there was some beautiful athleticism to go with that. At this point, I kind of wish that I could type quicker than I do to describe exactly how this match went down, but alas, I cannot. Mark Andrews early targeted the legs of Matt Cross, which of course was to try and take away the vertical base of the high flyer. Matt Cross broke the hold and leapt off the second rope with a crossbody for a two count. The midpoint of this match was an opportunity for the match to really pick up pace, and it included a suicide dive from Matt Cross, a flip over the top rope from Mark Andrews, and a beautiful space flying M-Dog drop, which is basically a cartwheel into an over-the-top corkscrew by Matt Cross. Cross then jumped into the Progress crowd and celebrated with them. Both men battled at one point on the top rope, with Matt Cross catching Mark Andrews in a fireman's carry position, which Cross then hit a Death Valley driver from the top rope for the closest of two counts. Mark Andrews retaliated by hitting a reverse Frankensteiner from the top rope, which somehow Matt Cross landing on his feet and hit the Welshman with a bicycle kick. He went to the top rope and went for a shooting star press, but Andrews got his knees up. He got a close two count and then tried to throw Cross into the ropes, but Matt blocked it and used the ropes for momentum and hit Stunner for the win. I really enjoyed this match, Darren. It wasn't quite everything that my lofty expectations wanted, but it did come damn close.
No, I really, really like this match.
Yeah.
It did take them a while to kind of get everybody. And this is where the Progress fans really did annoy me. There's more expletives I want to use, but as we can't, I'll just say they annoyed me. Because that whole flippy sugar chant they had going on early and felt really disrespectful.
And Little Man Wrestling.
Yeah, I was like, this is really disrespectful to what is, you know, what has the potential. And everyone knows in that building this has the potential to be a very, very good match. And it just felt like they were just being so condescending to them of, like, playing into that kind of, you know, that they are primarily, I think, hardcore fans of wrestling. And it felt like they were just trying to play into being, you know, what people like JR think of the internet wrestling community of, oh, they only want flippy stuff and they want fast, fast, fast. So they thought they'd play into that to be funny. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually went the other way and went against the ethos of Progress, and they started being gongled. And that really affect the early goings on there. Thankfully, they did eventually get them to shut up and start chanting properly. And that's when I think this match really, really picked up. And this was, I think, the best match of the show. After we got past that initially rough kind of phase, I think this was, yeah, the best match of the show with a really, really good finishing sequence. And I would be more than happy to see Matt Cross come back and do a few more shots. They're getting quite a few of the Lucha Underground people over. Mm-hmm. And I hope they keep that trend up, because whenever they come over, Shane Strickland's been over and he had great matches. I think Matt Cross also has earned himself a return ticket back to London. I'm happy to see more. I know they're, we watched the Progress documentary. We'll get onto that maybe a little bit later. But they said they never want to be accused of being anti-import. They were just only bringing the right imported star at the right time for the right match. It's a great mentality to have, and I don't want to go against that. But if they keep bringing in stars of this caliber to have this type of matches, I can't say that I'm then going to be happy when we have a show where, you know, there's not a high quality match of this standard, and there's not a British equivalent to kind of make up for that. You see what I mean? I don't want to. I'm very happy that Progress has put British wrestling on the map the way it has, and I like the way they're using stars. I want them to get that up, and I don't want them to put a kibosh on it just because, you know, we don't want people to think that we're, you know, now starting to champion the Americans.
Yeah, no, I agree. But this actual match, the reason I said that it wasn't quite everything that I wanted is because I was just looking for like a 10-star match. If we're gonna put star ratings on it, only because of obviously. I'm slightly biased when it comes to Mark Andrews because, you know, he is from my hometown, essentially. But from an analyst perspective, you know, this was a dream match. And I think I went into it with far too lofty expectations. Now, what I'm going to do now, Darren, is I'm probably going to shock you. And I'm going to criticize Mark Andrews slightly, saying everything I just said. Yeah. And it's not necessarily for anything he did in this match, but it's what he doesn't do. And basically, I think he's a fantastically gifted athlete. But I just, and this might come into what you said about the crowd trying to go into business for themselves, but it wasn't just this match. But I always feel that he plays more for the sort of crowd cheers rather than looking like he's in a fight. And this is how I felt during the first part of this match. And I know I might be slightly biased, but I just feel that he has the ability and the athleticism to go up a level, but he just seems content where he is. Does that make sense, or am I sort of looking at this through Welsh-coloured glasses?
I mean, you look at everything through Welsh-coloured glasses.
Yes, of course, yes.
But this is good. I'm glad you were able to criticise Mark Andrews, because I was about to say that in terms of people who we are biased for, your kind of biasness stretches over an entire country, so that anybody from the country of Wales who isn't called Mason Ryan is the greatest thing that ever lived and is beyond criticism. Now, you've just thrown Mark Andrews under the bus, so that's good. So that means, as long as you don't think Eddie Dennis is the greatest man alive, that means that your bias only extends to Nixon Newell, and that's okay, because my bias only truly extends to Dave Mastiff.
Yeah.
So that means we're one and one, and that's perfectly fine. No, Mark Andrews, for all of his many, many, many positive traits, does lack something.
Yeah.
And I found it very hard to put my finger on it, but I think you may have just cracked the case. He doesn't seem like he's in a real fight. He doesn't seem like this is a legitimate contest where he wants to win in order to progress up the card to win a championship match. He just seems far too content to, yeah, play to the crowd, and far too content to, you know, to lose. I know that's a weird sentence, but hear me out. It's never about him wanting to get a championship or him wanting to progress the card or him wanting to do something. Mark Andrews just is. He's just there. He's the embodiment of that mid-card guy who's never going to get out of the mid-card because he just never has. You know, that's partly down to booking, that he never really has upwards or downwards momentum. But when he does start to get some wins together, it doesn't mean anything. He doesn't move up the card. No. Yes, he did just have a Progress Wrestling title match, but they're not hard to come by a lot of times. In fact, most of the time when they have these kind of shows with minimal amount of build, the championship match will just be, you know, the champion versus whoever they can get in. Yeah, especially in the first few months, the first few shows of a new champion, they won't have significant title matches. So they're usually shipping Zack Sabre Jr. or Zach Gibson or Mark Andrews. It's usually one of those three taking the first loss for the new champion. And that was true of Mark Andrews when he faced, I believe it was Marty Scurll who beat him. Wasn't it, a few shows ago?
Yeah. The one after Marty Scurll won it from the Pastor William Eva. Yeah,
and that's the thing. Mark Andrews is a former Progress Wrestling champion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's clearly got the skills to get that far. But yeah, that you might have just hit on the head there. He doesn't make it seem real, that you're never truly invested with him. And I think lacking that X factor is always, unless he manages to find a way to, you know, to turn the corner. I don't think he could go heel. I don't know if he has that in him. However, I always said that about Neville, and oh my God, was I to prove wrong in a 2-day span? He's unfortunate. Until he manages to find that switch, I just feel like he's going to be stuck in this kind of
exhibition mode.
Yeah, he's just going to be stuck in this kind of malaise. Now that's good because he'll have a job for life no matter where he goes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, he can always get over, and he can always put on a good match. But you always want him to be better. You want everyone on the card to have that. In an ideal world, everyone in the card could feel like, you know, give him enough wins and give him enough time and he can get over and he can be a champion again. I don't get that feeling with Mark Andrews, at least right now.
Yeah. But to end on a positive note, as you said, best match of the night.
Yeah, and I think I'm showing my hand early here, but yeah, I think it was better than the main event as well. So okay. If you're going to check out any match from the show, now don't be a dongle about it. But if you're limited on time, do make sure when you're watching the show to watch this match.
Yeah. So Jim Smallbones back in the ring, and he asked the crowd to give both men another round of applause, which they duly delivered. Jim then introduced the main event, which was Progress Champion Mark Haskins versus Jimmy Havoc versus Marty Scurll. First man out was Jimmy Havoc, who was making his return to a Progress wrestling ring. He of course received a hero's welcome. The boy from Camden came out to I Hope You Suffer by AFI, and the crowd sang every word even after the music stopped. Marty Scurll's weird Bjork-inspired music hit, and out he came wearing a brown fur coat and holding a black umbrella. He immediately dropped the coat and umbrella, and before Mark Haskins had even made his entrance, ran to the ring and attacked Havoc, who spilled to ringside, and they were both brawling. They accidentally played Matt Cross's music in the arena before they stopped it and instead played Mark Haskins' music, who charged to the ring with belt in hand. He climbed in the ring and immediately hit a suicide dive on both men. The crowd were literally going insane at this point. When the dust settled, it was Jimmy Havoc and Mark Haskins who were in the ring staring at each other, with the crowd dual chanting of Jimmy, Jimmy, Jimmy Fudgin' Havoc and Mark, Mark, Mark Fudgin' Haskins. Marty, however, broke it up before they could face each other. This resulted in Marty and Havoc facing off. Marty eventually came out on top, but when he rolled in the ring, Haskins was there to meet him, and he tried to apply a submission, but Scurll rolled outside. Again, Scurll eventually came out on top and hit a superkick from the apron on Haskins. He then dropped Haskins back first on the apron. He continued to focus on the left shoulder of Haskins while taking the time to throw Havoc around at ringside to keep him away from the middle of the ring. The crowd chanted, "Anyone but Marty, anyone but Marty, la 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 la." We were then treated to a beautiful couple of minutes, which showed what a triple threat can be, where all three men were in the ring, but they had a believable sequence where all three men weren't just hitting spots, but looked like they were in a fight. Although saying that, that was kind of ruined later on when all three men hit super kicks on each other at the same time, although it was a cool visual. Towards the end of the match, all three men were in the ring battling. Havoc came out on top and hit both opponents with clotheslines. Havoc went to ringside and lined up four chairs on the outside. He had Marty in a position where he looked like he was going to superplex Marty to the outside from the top rope, but Scurll blocked it. Marty hit forearms and hit a headbutt on Havoc, who fell from the top onto the chairs that he set up. He didn't so much bump on the chairs as opposed to bounce off the chairs. It was sick. It was now Marty and Haskins left. Marty screamed at Haskins, "He is the real champion," slapped Haskins, but Haskins reversed a suplex into an armbar. Marty then reversed this into a chicken wing, but Haskins reversed again into a sharpshooter in the middle of the ring. Havoc came out of nowhere and broke this up and hit the acid rainmaker. He went for the pin, but Marty came from behind and applied a chicken wing to Havoc, but Havoc managed to escape. He flipped the bird to Marty, who kicked him below the belt. He turned around and Haskins got him in the sharpshooter and leant back, and Marty had no choice but to tap. Before we get into what happens afterwards, which is going to be a massive talking point, I feel, thoughts on the match, Darren?
It was good. It was a nice, solid main event, I think. It's not up to the kind of levels of the previous... the previous main event was, which was Tommy End, Marty Scurll, and Mark Haskins. I think that was better, but it had a bigger venue. It had more momentum and all that good stuff. The thing I took away most from this match, and it was surprising, I didn't expect to come away with this, but this match showed that Jimmy Havoc can wrestle.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I have limited experience with Jimmy Havoc. I've saw him live. That was the first time I ever saw him. And I haven't actually seen him crop up since. I know he did a few things in TNA, but I don't watch TNA. And so, yeah, this is my first time seeing him outside of a hardcore match, which I know he's known for. He can wrestle. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not, you know, the second coming of Shawn Michaels or anything, but he can get it done in the ring. That just makes me more annoyed now going forward. And I see him do these crappy death matches. I'm like, but you can wrestle. You don't need to do this garbage. So why are you? That was my biggest takeaway here. But yeah, a good, solid first defense for Mark Haskins. And it set up quite a few nice possibilities until...
until... I'll give you my thoughts on the match first, if that's okay.
No.
Pretty much echoing what you said anyway. I'm not particularly fond of triple threats anyway. I did say when I was running down what happened that they did show what they can do, but then they sort of reverted back to the hit a spot, someone leaves the ring, and then... two men go at it, someone comes in, knocks someone else out, etc., etc. Repeat, rinse and repeat, etc. So, yeah, I'm always a little bit, when it comes to triple threats anyway. I always mark it down for that. But it was definitely a solid effort for all concerned. However, as Darren has already alluded to, I do feel that this match will forever be overshadowed. And it is something that Darren and I have wanted to talk about since we heard that it happened. Just to run it down. After the match, Mark cradled the belt mid-ring as Marty made it his escape. Jimmy Havoc climbed in the ring, but then slid out. The crowd were on their feet as the commentators played up how much Mark Haskins loved the company and the belt before he headed backstage. Jim Smallman climbed in the ring and was thanking the fans for coming, but he was cut off by Mark Haskins slowly making his way to the ring from the back. He climbed into the ring... went mid-ring, and with the crowd chanting, "We love you, Haskins," he placed the belt mid-ring after kissing it. He slid out of the ring without the belt, and the crowd was shouting, "What? What are you doing? Why, Mark? Why?" Jim picked up the belt and made his way backstage along with Glenn, who left the commentary position. The show faded to black at this point. Now, when we were alerted to this, because... as Darren said earlier on, we try and avoid all spoilers before we watch the show because we don't go in with any preconceived notions. So I was alerted to this, and I in turn let Darren know, and we both watched the video that Progress put out, which was essentially this ending and a dodgy-looking promo backstage where Mark Haskins was saying that he had to give up the championship and had to... quit wrestling for a while because of his health and because of an unspecified injury which needed to heal. And if we're being honest, when we first watched it, we were 50-50 at the time as to whether this was a work or whether this was something else going on. And at least in my mind, I doubted that Mark's injury was legitimate. A month and a bit on, Darren, how do you feel about this retrospectively?
I'm either still not entirely sure that, you know, it was legitimate, or Mark Haskins is an idiot. One of the two. Now, the reasons for case number one, which is that it's, you know, a bit too fishy, is that he did just go and wrestle a match, and it wasn't exactly like it was. Now, I didn't admittedly pay attention, and perhaps you should have, to how many times he bumped. I must admit we didn't pay a lot of attention to that, but he took super kicks and he wasn't noticeable if he was taking less risks.
There was one point, because I was personally looking out for this, so I'll just give you this. I know at one point he did take a vicious sort of bump against the apron on his back. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was taking anything lightly.
Right, so if he was truly injured enough where he has to relinquish the title, then should he be wrestling that type of match? And then, you know, the way they played it up at the end, the way the promo was shot, making it seem very rehearsed, the whole thing that you pointed out was your big problem, which was the way that Jim Smallman dealt with everything and the way the commentary team dealt with everything. It all seems very fishy. Now, so that has drawn me to the conclusion that maybe the injury isn't as bad as he's making out. He could still be injured mm-hmm. or need time off or whatever it is. But there's that. So then the case for option two, Mark Haskins is an idiot, is he's actually not injured. And then what the hell was he doing wrestling that match? Mm-hmm. That is, I know there's the show must go on and you're there and you want to give him a good match before you have to relinquish the title. But if you're truly that bad, then you've just made the fans feel bad for, in you know, you felt the need to go out there and put a match on for them for relinquishing your title. That doesn't put Mark Haskins in a great light. You make it seem foolish, reckless, and yeah, it just doesn't make him out to be the greatest of baby faces, which is just kind of very odd. So hopefully it's option one. And he is a little bit injured, but not that bad injured. So this match was, whilst not great, and no wrestler should be forced to work injured if they do have to take time off for said injury, if it's that bad, then that's slightly better than Mark Haskins really shouldn't have been doing that, and that was a really stupid risk for him to take.
Now, for me, I don't think it was a shoot in any way whatsoever in terms of Mark Haskins, that the company didn't know Mark Haskins was injured and he came out, plopped the belt in the middle of the ring, and everyone's reaction was genuine. I don't think that at all.
Oh, not for a goddamn second.
No. I just wanted to get that out there. But then, as you've said and alluded to, the company look ridiculous for allowing someone who is taking a lot of time off in wrestling, in a wrestling sort of sense, because of an injury, but yet allow him to work this kind of match. Now, my suspicions, and this was sort of backed up by the documentary which Progress puts out. It was essentially a documentary which, over the course of 20 minutes, they tried to give a brief history of Progress and try and show what makes Progress Wrestling so special, etc., etc. But they did have interviews with Mark Haskins at home with his wife, etc., etc. And one telling story that he said was a couple of years ago after the Progress show, he was in the bar and he collapsed and they had to perform CPR because he stopped breathing. Now, he also made the point that wrestling was difficult and all the traveling has taken a lot of toll on his body. I'm just wondering whether it's not necessarily one injury that has caused an issue, but just more of a combination of lots of different injuries and tiredness, and he just needed simply to take a couple of months off.
Well, maybe, but you know, the point you made of Progress shouldn't have let him wrestle if he's that bad makes a lot of sense, especially since they're trying to make themselves out to be such a great and glorious company.
But that's what I mean. If it's more a case of, it's not one particular injury. If it's a neck injury, for example, and they let him wrestle that, they are foolish and irresponsible. But if it's just a nagging knee injury and a nagging back and a bit of a shoulder tear and you know, usual wear and tear on the bodies, but it's more Mark Haskins feeling like he's losing control because he's so tired, then I'm fine with them sort of letting him wrestle one final match before going on a hiatus.
Okay, but then why have him cut that promo where he talks about neck issues and put that amount of, you know, sorrow is probably too harsh a word, but, you know, put that in the back of fans' mind that he's legitimately badly hurt. Neck accident. A lot of wrestlers' careers have been, you know, ended by neck problems. a lot of wrestlers' lives after wrestling have been ruined because they have bad necks. So if it isn't a neck injury and it's just something mild and nagging, or, you know, it is a neck injury but it's nowhere near as bad as he's making out, that's really bad as well. Basically, what I'm saying is somebody coming out of this situation will be revealed to be a terrible, terrible human being. And whether that's Mark Haskins or, you know, Progress essentially throwing their "let's all be friends and family and we all love each other" out of the window by allowing him to wrestle, I don't know. But finally, that wasn't a documentary on the Progress Wrestling site. That was a 20-minute fluff piece. That was... No, listen to me, right? Documentaries are meant to be maybe not hard-hitting. They don't have to be, you know, warts and all and stuff. But they're meant to break new ground and show, you know, the ups and downs and be interesting. All that was a 20-minute advert for Progress. And I don't know why I expected any better, as it was on the Progress Wrestling website, because it's not like Beyond the Mat is on the network. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know what I was expecting, but no. You said, watch this, it's really good and it's going to be very important to Ejo. And then I was just like, wow. That was just, I really do like you, Progress. I say a lot of negative things about you in this show, but I really, really do like you. And I implore people to go and watch your product, but you don't need to watch that documentary. If you have no idea who Progress is, it's a nice catch-up, but I would have preferred if it was a more, you know, behind-the-scenes look at the Brixton show, like a, you know, like a WWE 24-style thing, or was actually a warts and all, you know, talking about the actual issues that wrestlers go through and being really hard-hitting. Both of those would have been preferable to the fluffiest fluff that ever fluffed.
I think you're hitting the point. I think it was produced more for someone who has heard of Progress but has no idea who they are, what they do, and what makes them so special.
Made by a guy who clearly loves Progress Wrestling and will hear no bad things about it.
Well, yeah.
There's lots of these documentaries on Netflix, as a matter of fact, that you can go check out. It's very similar to the Anonymous documentary on Netflix. That's what I kept getting the feeling of. Like, this is clearly made by someone who has a very large trouser movement about Progress, and he had to commit that to celluloid.
I just think that this was a good documentary for not people like me and you, and possibly not even half the people who are listening to this, but for the people who, as I said, just the people who have never seen Progress, have heard about it, and just really want to get into it, but sort of put off by not knowing what essentially it's all about. I thought it did well, but yeah. So I think based on that documentary, I think that's my theory anyway, in terms of with Mark Haskins.
We shall see, but he doesn't appear in at least the next two shows that we know of, and he hasn't appeared anywhere else. So it does seem at least there is some substance here. But yeah, he doesn't appear on the next show, which is the Graps of Wrath. I have the card for you here. We are going to see, you know, they do crown a new Progress champion on this show. The format of the show is the first five matches. The winner of those matches proceed on to a seven-man elimination match. Whoa. At the end of the show. I know. A seven-match. Seven-man. Oh, yeah, I know. But trust me, there's a lot to go through with that show. But yeah, they all proceed to a second half match, which will be a seven-man elimination match to determine the new Progress Wrestling champion. So, should a tag team win, both men get to go into the final match. So, the matches are as follows. We have FSU, which is, of course, Mark Andrews and Eddie Dennis. They're taking on the Save Pacific Power Trip, which is Travis Banks and TK Cooper. We have Joe Coffey versus the Pastor William Eva. We have British Strong Style taking on the London Rights. I believe that's also a Progress tag team match, tag team title match as well. We have Jimmy Havoc versus Marty Scurll. And we have Will Ospreay versus Matt Riddle, which is the match that I was made aware of by Zim, who excitedly texted me to tell me I need to go to that show. I was annoyingly in London on the same weekend this show happened, but I couldn't actually make it to the show. They also have the next match in the women's natural progression series to crown the first Progress Women's Champion, and that is going to be Katie Harvey versus Nixon Newell.
Woo!
I knew Hayden would be very excited about that. So, yes, and then the main event is that seven-man match, as I mentioned before. So, yeah, that is the Graps of Wrath.
Excellent. I look forward to catching up with that. So before we close out, Darren, is there anything else you want to say about Chapter 38, when men throw men at men?
Still the best pay-per-view name ever.
Okay.
And in the middle show, I think the potential for the next show to blow it out of the water was there. We'll find out on the next episode if it did that. But yeah, this was... We were still in that cooling off period coming out of the B show at Brixton. It doesn't seem to be an obvious point of where the next peak is going to be. So I don't really know when things are going to start getting really, truly interesting again. Admittedly, they don't really have a structure in place like, you know, like a, they don't have a WrestleMania per se or big events they build up to. They tend to have bigger shows than, you know, they have set shows which are bigger than the ones that preceded, you know. This was very much one of those preceding shows. Set some things up, and there are some interesting things coming out of this show that we get to pay attention to, especially as we don't have a champion at the moment, and we're guaranteed to see a new one at the next show, which is great. The potential for the next one to be better is there, and we will find it next time if it is.
Excellent. So before we go, Darren, I know you just had a big little monologue there, but do you want to plug anything before we go?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at The Guttridge. You can also go check out my other website, which is failentertainment.com. That's fail spelled
F-O-U-L.
Entertainment.com. Yes, over there, posted today, we have a Star Wars Rogue One review in podcast form over there. We also have a Sun and Moon review, which was posted a few weeks ago. Plus, we are now gearing up, of course, with the end of the year. We have a end of year articles. I've already written my top 10 films of the year, the top 10 everything else, and the 2017 preview will be coming very, very shortly. So, yeah, keep it locked over there, failentertainment.com, and I'll be posting all of the updates on my Twitter, which is at The Guttridge.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter at Hayden Gleed. I've got a blog which is still on the main page of prowrestling.net, which looks at the NXT TakeOver London from last year and how many people from that show has actually been called up, and also what they've done with them, and basically ranting about how I feel they've been wasted, essentially. It's been a well-received blog, so certainly check that out. I urge you to take up a ProWrestling.net membership. You get a lot of me and Darren. You get a lot of me doing solo stuff with ROH these days. And everything that I said at the beginning of the show. So any closing words from you, Darren, to these lovely, lovely people?
Look forward to the obvious match on the Grapes of Wrath. It is really good. I'll show my hand prematurely. the show is dominated by one match, and oh, good God almighty, it's fantastic. But no, that's pretty much everything I have. I hope if we don't see you, have a Merry Christmas, of course, to all of the .NET members, and we'll see you bright and early in 2017, where we get to talk even more British wrestling when the UK, the WWE UK tournament kicks off in early January.
I've heard that Darren's premature quite a lot with a lot of things. So on that note, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas also, or a Happy Holidays, depending on what your stance is on Christmas. So yeah, until we speak to you soon, take care.